Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour, August 20th, 2020. That's a magic date of some kind, August 20, 2020. And tonight I'll be talking about energy. This situation in California has really gotten out of hand and, of course, totally mismanaged. Finally, the governor, the idiot governor of California is coming out, Gavin Newsom, and I have a little parody on him this evening, but comes out and admits that they've installed all of this alternative energy, and it's been cloudy with no wind. So they have, you know, the gigawatts of alternative energy that they've installed simply do not work. And so, I'll be talking about that. I'll also be talking about, remember, for a long time I've been predicting that NASA and the National Weather Service, and NOAA, as it's called, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, the National Weather Service, would come out and do a combined false flag this fall on solar flares. But they have to get the public mentally aware of this first. They have to prime the pump, so to speak, in the news media, and that's happening right now. I'll be talking about that. So anyway, first of all, I want to start out in California with 112 degree temperature the other day, 130 degrees in Death Valley. Boy, that's why they call it Death Valley. Can you imagine being out there with an old group of with your mule team trying to trek through Death Valley with 130 degree temperature, running out of water? Ooh, not good, not good. So at any rate, the question is, take your average California home with an air conditioner running, how much energy does that house consume? And the real question is, how much in terms of solar panels would it take to operate the air conditioner? Just the air conditioner. This is not lights. This is not television. This is not washing machine or dryer, electric dryers or anything like that. Just air conditioning. How much solar panel installation would it take to provide the energy to run that air conditioning in that house? Okay, so let's go through some numbers here. And I'll try not to belabor you with too many details here, but I want for people who would be so-called checking the numbers, etc. This I'll give enough details so you could make these calculations yourself. Okay, so let's imagine that your average solar panel is 250 watts, and so at around 15%, that would be the production on a good day. This would be on a nice sunny day because you only have a few hours of sun. You have some cloudy time, and so the national average, they say, is around 0.15. So you take that 250 watts and you multiply it by 0.15 to find out how much energy that is going to produce on in a day. Okay. So then you find out that you would need about 400 solar panels, and this is looking at the air conditioner. A typical air conditioner runs around 50% of the time on a hot day. It cycles on, cycles off. So we're not counting the surge, which is a big part of this expense curve. We're not counting the surge. We're just doing like the imagining that there was no surge to turn on that three-phase motor that runs the air conditioner. So it's cycling on and off. It's going to run about 12 hours per day. So you're taking 5,000 watts or 5 kilowatts, and you're running that for 12 hours a day. Well, that brings you out to 60 kilowatt hours per day. Now, if you look on your electric bill and you're paying for energy, it's your energy bill. And if you took a physics course and you understood electrical energy, you would look in terms of kilowatt hours or megawatt hours, etc. And just another caveat here that this week, now the average bill, if you look at your electric bill, depending on where you live, it's going to be a bit different. But the average cost per electricity in the United States is around 10 cents per kilowatt hour. That means that you could run a kilowatt worth of energy for 1 hour, and it would cost you 10 cents. That's the rate of electricity. And then, of course, at your electric bill, you're going to have other fees and taxes and other things stacked on top of that, your regular monthly base fee, etc. So when you get your final electric bill, you're not just paying for the electricity energy, you're paying for some other things and maybe, you know. So we're just looking at the cost of electricity. Now, in California, the price of electricity just jumped up to about 10 times that. And so even if you're in remote places like on an island, you might be paying 40 cents a kilowatt hour, which would be extravagant. That would be really a lot. I mean, that's like if you lived in, say, Honolulu, where they are burning number two fuel oil and there's a lot of air conditioning going on, a lot of hotels, a lot of people living in houses where they air condition 24/7, and they have very poor resources for generating electricity, you're paying probably 40, 45 cents a kilowatt hour. Okay, yeah, even in California, though, they've gone way, way over this, up to $1,000 a megawatt hour. So that translates into about a dollar per kilowatt hour. And that's what you would see on your home bill. So that's just absolutely over the top outrageous. Absolutely outrageous. So that means that per day, you're using 60 kilowatt hours per day. You're using a dollar per kilowatt hour. That's $60 a day just to run your air conditioner. Now you multiply that times a 30-day month and you get $1,800. So your average electric bill in California is going to be more than the average mortgage in the rest of the country. Okay, so let's take a look now at how many solar panels it would take to run this operation. Okay, so you take an average solar panel, 250 watts, and you multiply that by 0.15. That's the average amount of energy you're going to get out of that solar panel over a day or a month or a year. And that's an industry standard. That's not my number. That's an industry standard number. And anybody in the business, if they're honest, will tell you that number. Okay, so at 0.15 kilowatt hours per day, how many solar panels would it take to give you your 60 kilowatts? So you take 60 divided by 0.15 and you come up with 400. So that little calculation tells you that you would need 400 solar panels. Now remember that on a roof, on a California house, you might have room to put 10 or maybe 20 solar panels. You would need 400 solar panels to generate the electricity to run your air conditioner. But your air conditioner runs 24/7. It runs all day long and all night long, and the sun isn't shining all the time. So you're going to have to store up most of this energy. You're going to have to store up over 80% of it in batteries so that you can run your air conditioner 24/7. Okay, so what's the cost of these batteries? Well, let's first get at the cost of these solar panels. And at the rate of around $350 per solar panel installed, comes out to around $140,000. This would be for one house, the installation of solar panels on a good day. Now remember that this past week in California, they were having poor sun. As soon as the least bit of haze comes out in the air, those solar panel production go way down. And also, And so the end result is that you're not going to be getting, you would need a lot more than 400 panels. You'd probably need about three or four times that. But we're just assuming that you have good sun, which is, of course, is not the case. So giving optimal conditions is what I'm saying. You take those 400 solar panels, and once they get installed, once you get all the installation done and everything else, it's around $350 per solar panel. multiply that times 400, and you get a nice, tidy sum of $140,000. But you need batteries. So let's go to the premier sale location for batteries. That would be Tesla. Tesla Powerwalls, and you calculate the number of Tesla Powerwalls that it would take to carry your air conditioner through the end of the day to run your air conditioner, and that turns out to be around $70,000. Okay, these are conservative estimates. Like I say, this is on a bright, sunny day, but and that's not the case. And so even this would not run your air conditioner in your house. So for an investment of around $210,000, or it actually would be close to around $220,000, as that $70,000 turned out to be about $78,000. So for the nice tidy sum of around $220,000, you could put solar panels up to power just your air conditioner. Like I say, this is not the lights, the computer, TV, electric stove, electric dryer, electric washer, hot water heater sometimes is electric. None of that would run off of this. You would still have to be dependent. Now, the question is, how much area would it take to put up these 400 solar panels? And like I said, on a given roof in California, you might get 10. If you had a pretty big place, you might get 20 solar panels. That's like 5% of the 400 that you would need at most on the roof of the house. So now you're going to need a big backyard to put up these 400 solar panels. And so then the question is, let's expand this to these 750,000 homes in California that this past week were completely without electricity. And so now multiply 750,000 times the square footage, and here's what it turns out to be. I'll spare you all of the numbers, but it turns out that they would have to completely cover all of Los Angeles City. Now we're talking about the city of Los Angeles, and you would have to cover the entire city of Los Angeles with solar panels just to run the air conditioning. And those solar panels typically have a lifetime of about 10 years. Now, when you buy solar panels, this is a kind of a catch. They give them a 20 to 25 year rating. And that means that the solar panels will still be producing electricity in 20 to 25 years, which is true. However, they lose about 1% of their production every year. So that in 10 years, if you're starting out with a 20% efficient panel, in 10 years, you only have half of that. In another 10 years, you only have half of that. So sure, you're going to be getting some juice out of those solar panels after 10 years, but not very much. Certainly nothing like when they were brand spanking new. Okay, the other thing about solar panels is that they test them in a laboratory with what is known as a flash test. So what they do is they take a piece of solar panel, they put it up against a light, and then they flash a light on it. It turns out that when you do that, because the solar panel is sitting there, it's not active, you get the maximum amount of current out of the solar panel sample. And so that's the way they test them and rate them. But once you put a solar panel out in the field on a roof, and it's actually working, that production goes down. It drops by about 4%. It goes from 20 down to 16. Okay, on a hot day, which we were having right now, the solar panels drop another 3%. So you go down from 20 to 16 down to 13%. And so then after 10 years, you're only getting about 6% of the energy you thought you would get. And this is so typical of solar panel people, residents who put in solar, and they go, gee, I'm not getting what they told me I would get. Well, they didn't tell you, they weren't really truthful when they sold you the solar panels of all of the conditionings, the factors, and the basically like a friend of mine says, he says, this would be like selling you a high-end Porsche automobile and saying, this car has 600 horsepower. And you go, man, okay, I want to buy that Porsche. 600 horsepower? I would love to have 600 horsepower Porsche. And so you get in the car, you buy your car, you go drive it down the road, and you put down the, you know, you get out on the highway, and you're going to stomp on that foot pedal and feel that 600 horsepower. And this thing just like dogs along, and it doesn't go, and you bring it back, and you measure it, and you say, this thing's only got 75 horsepower. And the guy goes, yeah, that's right. It's only got 75 horsepower. And you go, well, you sold it to me, and you said it was going to have 600 horsepower. Oh, yeah, but it's only going to do 15% of that. You go, what? Yeah, well, just read the fine print in your contract. This, you don't get 600 horsepower. You only get 75 horsepower. That's what it's like. You go, huh? Well, that's what the people realize when you hear that spiffy ad on the radio. You've all heard them. Cut your electric bill. Buy solar. You can get them free. You get tax incentives. You get all of these incentives to buy this. The power company is pushing this. You know why the power company is pushing you to buy solar panels? Because, number one, they know they don't work. Number two, they can turn them off anytime they want. There's a story about a couple in California that installed solar panel, and they were bragging they're going green. They were going to get most of their energy from solar panels. And after a year, they started noticing on the electric bill that, hey, we're not getting any savings. So they called up the electric company and said, where's the credit we're supposed to be getting from our spiffy new solar panels? And the electric company said, oh, yeah, we haven't turned them on. What do you mean, turned them on? And they said, yeah, we have control over your solar panels. We have not turned them on. Okay, now, long, long time ago, this is in the early, kind of like the mid-2000s, I was asked by a power company. It was actually a company up in the upper Midwest, and they were doing biofuel. They were installing plants to convert corn into ethanol, basically. And it was a big going concern, a highly successful company, and asked me to do a study of the overall efficiency of XL Energy, the distribution of electricity. And so I did that, and at the end they said, well, check out this emerging technology of alternative energy, which at the time were three-blade wind turbines and solar panels. So I checked it out, and I'm looking at these, and I'm going, holy cow, this stuff doesn't work. This stuff will never work. So as you do in a physics problem, something, a technique I learned when I was in college, maybe even high school, that what you do to have greater understanding of a physical process, you go to the extreme, and you take all the parameters and push them out, or you take one parameter and push it out to the extreme values that they could take, and that gives you some understanding of what are the limitations of this system, etc. So I did that with solar panels and wind turbines. And with solar panels, I said, what if you could design a solar panel that was 100% efficient? Now, the solar panels they're using today, the laboratory flash test puts them at around 33% efficient, which is pretty good, actually. A third of the solar energy arriving turns into useful electricity. But that's the flash test. That's not the real test. In reality, they're running around 16 to 20%. Okay. But anyway, what if you could make, and this is, by the way, in German, it's not me that invented this. The German scientists used to call this Gedanken experiments, thought experiment. Just think through the whole thing and use your knowledge of equations and mathematics and projective analysis, etc. So anyway, I did a Gedanken experiment on the solar panels. What if you could build a solar panel that was 100% efficient and cost a penny. Would that device solve the world energy problem? And the answer is no, for the simple reason that gathering the energy is one thing, but then what do you do with it? The sun is not shining 24/7. The sun, on average, shines in the useful 100% activation of that solar panel happens over only 4 hours per day. Because when the sun comes up, it's not hitting the panels directly, etc. It's coming through the atmosphere, so it's not as bright. You get cloud time when the solar panels are not producing. So on average, you're getting about 4 hours per day of 100% capacity on that solar panel. And that's called four solar hours. It's the sum total of energy you will get out of that solar panel. So you take a 250-watt solar panel, and you're going to get about 4 hours out of that. Four out of 24 hours is 1/6, and so 1/6 is equivalent of 16.6%, and that's where that number comes from. That's why when I said, okay, take that 250-watt solar panel and multiply it by 0.15. And the people who are realistic know that even the 0.16 is a bit optimistic. But that's where it comes from. You have four solar hours per day, 100% capacity on those solar panels. 4 hours is four out of 24 hours. That's 1/6 of the day. 1 divided by 6 is 0.166. And that's where that number comes from. And so that's not me, that's not pessimistic, that's reality. That's how much energy you're going to get out of a solar panel. Now, just a caveat here, I did an analysis for a guy, a friend of mine who lives in Kenya, and they wanted to put solar panels on installation to run it, and they were going to invest a big amount of money. So I went through the actual analysis, and it turned out to be the equivalent. They were going to spend $150,000 on solar panels, and it turned out to be the equivalent of an 18-kilowatt diesel generator, which would cost you around, you know, $10,000 on the international market. So instead of putting $150,000 into solar panels, he could buy an 18-kilowatt generator and run it for 20 years for far less money than the $150,000. And the $150,000 installation of solar panels did not include the batteries, which was, when you looked at the total cost, it would have been around, oh, $350,000 for this equivalent of an 18-kilowatt generator. Wow. And he was like, holy cow, I can't believe this. Yeah, well, that's the thing. You think, oh, we're going to have all of this electrical generation from solar panels, not realizing that that's the nameplate value. That's not what you're going to get in terms of electricity. Okay. So at any rate, getting back to Los Angeles, the governor came out, and I'm sure somebody had to prime him to talk about this. And so California has easily put in, you know, I'm not going to put a number or figure on it, but they probably put in around a gigawatt of, or maybe more, maybe 2 gigawatts of alternative energy, 3-blade wind turbines. If you look up at Eagles Pass there as you're coming in on the 10 west of San Diego, I'm sorry, east of San Diego. If you're west of San Diego, you're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, excuse me. And so, yeah, if you're coming in, that, you know, that big installation, one time I drove through there in the middle of the night. And so I'm coming from Phoenix, I'm going to San Diego from Phoenix. So I come over that pass, and I start seeing this lights, the red lights blinking. And like, you can see this for 50 miles away. It's just, you know, it's out in the middle of the desert. I'm going, what the heck is this? Well, it was that installation. And you get up there, and the wind was just about blowing my car off the road. It was really ripping. I mean, there's a lot of wind there. And so I, I'm driving to, and I look up, and there's these all of these three-blade wind towers. There was not a single one of them that was turning. I mean, as far as the eye could see, because by then the blinking lights would light up the whole area as far as you could see. And I did, you know, as far as I could see, thousands and thousands of these three-blade wind turbines, not a single one was turning, not one, in this just ripping wind. Anyway, yeah, California is having some issues. And so with that in mind, I'm going to read something that I wrote this week. I woke up early in the morning, and maybe I was dreaming this. I'm not sure what, but it's a little paradigm, kind of like a one-act play. So I'm going to read this, and I think you'll get the point. Okay, so let me pull this up here. Anyway, here it is, and I sent this out to a bunch of people. I think some people actually posted it, radio talk show hosts posted it on their webpage. Anyway, it's titled, Millions in Heat Ravaged California Without Power. I can hear the family conversation in California. And so anyway, it's this conversation between the wife and her husband. And the wife starts out, she goes, honey, do we charge the family Tesla or stay cool and run air conditioning? It is 100 degrees in the house. To which the husband replies, I'm sure glad Governor Newsom has a new lockdown, so I don't have to go to work, so that's an easy decision. Let's run the air conditioner. To which the wife replies, but honey, we're out of food and the kids don't have anything to eat. I need the car charged to go shopping. The husband replies, well, Governor Newsom has us covered there also. You don't have to go to the store since there won't be any harvest this year. Governor Newsom told us on the news that due to the coronavirus among illegal alien pickers, there's no food to buy anyway. So the conversation continues. Honey, how are we going to pay the electric bill when the wholesale price of electric just shot up to $1 per kilowatt hour, over 10 times the national average? The husband replies, doggone it, Governor Newsom has us covered there too, as the electric companies will all go bankrupt any day now, and this will end up in court and take years to settle, so don't worry about paying the electric bill. Anyway, I hear that next month we won't have an electric company at all. Then the wife comes in and she goes, honey, I just tried to turn on the gas stove to boil some water for coffee, but there's no gas. The husband replies, oh, that's right. The price of natural gas just doubled also, since it's being diverted to create electricity. Governor Newsom's energy staff converted all the power plants to natural gas instead of staying with coal, which is more reliable and not used for other things like exporting to China to fuel their insatiable appetite for energy. To which the wife replies, honey, I'm sure glad we have Governor Newsom at the helm. What would we do without him? That's my little parody that I wrote the other morning, sent this around to people, and I got some good responses. But that's a condition in California. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And by the way, part of that, all of those things are true. The power companies in California are on the verge of bankruptcy. They probably will all be in bankruptcy court this year. The rolling out blackouts will continue. Hundreds of thousands of houses, which means millions of people in California without electricity and no way to fix it because they didn't plan on a rainy day. They followed the trendiness, and now I want to get into something that I predicted. If you followed my show for any length of time, you know I've talked about natural gas. The fracking, which what does that do? That pushes the natural gas out of the ground. You get an abundance of it. But when you come back the second time, you don't get any. And so to get the natural gas out of the ground, they have to, a lot of times, pump something into the ground to force it out. Well, the fracking gives it an impulse, an explosive impulse, forces a tremendous amount of natural gas out at one time. Now, what do you do with all this natural gas? Well, they're shipping it out of the port of Houston. It's not really Houston. It's kind of like down there on the Gulf. And they have ships out in the Gulf. They're big. They look like oil tankers, but they got three big globes. And in those globes are the pressurized natural gas. They're selling it to China, shipping it over there like crazy because there's no way to store all of this. And so, by the way, all these fracking companies are in bankruptcy. It's an absolute economic disaster. But it's using up this natural resource, and it creates this extremely volatile environment that, in the case of California, they are the price of natural gas doubled in one day. And that's what I've been telling people. You cannot rely on natural gas. And I'll get into the wing generator in just a minute, but the natural gas conversion has been going on around the country, shutting down coal plants, and this is the trend. Oh, it's going to be cheaper for the short term, but they're not planning. They're not going to be able to convert back to coal because they're killing the coal industry. And I don't like coal. Believe me, I do not like coal at all. But we also need reliable power. And the only real reliable power that has a stable source of energy for this country is coal. And we have clean coal. It's relatively clean. It's scrubbed, and so it's not the major pollutant, although heat pollution is always there. It's something you cannot get around. And the wing generator is the real solution. Now, what would happen if California had installed wing generators instead of the three-blade wind turbines that don't work? They would have a good percentage of the energy that they needed from places like Eagles Pass and places where the wind does blow consistently. They've had relatively low wind, but the thing about the wing generator, my invention, is that it produces a lot of electricity even at low wind speeds. Okay, so at any rate, California is having big problems. But the other thing is that this is all by design. This is not just some catastrophic event based on bad management, which is, of course, Newsom doesn't know what he's doing. He's just an idiot. And, you know, he's related to Pelosi. If you don't know who these people are, you have to, there are some lineage and there's some family trees, etc., to find out, like, who Pelosi married, this Nancy Pelosi chick from California, 90 years old, 80 years old, Speaker of the House. She's connected to families, her husband and Newsom, and all of these people running California are related. It's a big gang, and what they're doing is operating part of the New World Order. The whole purpose is to take down the country. There's no issue with finding people that can pick the crops out in California. That's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. But they're going to cut the food supply off to the United States. A number of weeks ago, I wrote an article called Holodomor, and referring to the 1930 to 34 starvation in the Ukraine, where food was politicized. That's going to happen in the United States. And this issue going on in California is right at the heart of it. So something I really dislike, and that's when I'm right all the time, and I'm just being facetious. I do make mistakes, and then I admit them. But when I predicted a long time ago this issue with natural gas, I was the only person on the planet saying it. Everybody else is, oh, we have infinite supply of natural gas. Oh, we have so much natural gas, it'll last forever. Well, but that's not the economic reality. The economic reality is most of the natural gas is being shipped off to China and other places. We are an energy exporter for the first time in history. That's all well and good. But when you have a situation where now you're converting a basic necessity of life, which is electricity, to depend on that natural gas supply chain within the country, that's what you have to look at. And when you start willy-nilly converting electric power plants from coal to natural gas, assuming that that natural gas supply is going to be stable and going to be there in the quantities you need. I mean, look at the amount of energy that's being consumed in Los Angeles just to cool the houses. It's beyond astronomical. So in one day, the natural gas prices doubled. That's beyond recognition. The cost of electricity shot up 10 times in a matter of a couple months. Absolutely insanity, just because of warm weather, because of something that should have been planned on. Gee, big surprise, Southern California, hot weather in August. I mean, it shouldn't take a rocket scientist to figure this one out. But unfortunately, all the rocket scientists in Southern California, I don't know what they're doing. Maybe I'm not going to comment, but it's just ridiculous. There's no planning. There's no understanding. And the most obvious thing is that the complete dependence on natural gas for your power supply is a bad idea. And only to recognize this after the emergency has occurred just shows that these people are not thinking. They're absolutely not with the program at all. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here. There's a number of important topics to cover. Remember, I was talking about how this fall, NASA and NOAA would pull out all the stops, basically. They would have a false flag solar event, increased hurricanes, all kinds of things. And so anyway, that's happening right now. I just saw an article about expect a massive hurricane season this fall, and there's no scientific reason for doing this. But they came up with all of these, this kind of bubble-headed blonde announcer, and I'm sorry, but this was a bubble-headed blonde talking. And the reason I call her that, and that's derogatory, thank you very much, is because this woman is reading lines. It's a form of mental prostitution, where you read lines on a text, make it sound exciting, like you really know what you're talking about, and really are priming the pump for disinformation. So I call it mental prostitution, bubble-headed blonde. All of those terms apply. Okay, so anyway, she's telling us that the hurricane season is going to really ramp up, and that there's wind shear is down. This is the claims, and none of these have anything to do with hurricane production at all, saying that the tropical waves coming off of Africa are more abundant, that the ocean is warmer than normal, and that there's going to be a lack of dust in the air from the Sahara Desert. None of these have anything to do with hurricane production. Hurricanes are produced from electrical currents from the ionosphere, so it depends on what's going on outside of our planet, not dust from the Sahara Desert. But this is the crap that they're trying to pawn off on the public. But anything to try and spawn this idea that there would be a large increase in storm activity this fall. And the whole point is, as I said, this is just one factor they're going to throw in the mix to try and disrupt the 2020 election. Okay, along that same vein, this is happening right now, and this is a huge story. I want to be very specific about this. Yesterday, a webpage called Weather Boy, and not to give them any fanfare, but a total disinformation webpage, came up with a story that NOAA and NASA have, or this is starting out with NASA, is saw a solar flare that might be coming and have a glancing blow on Earth. Well, it's a B1 flare, the absolute lowest flare that could possibly exist on the sun. In other words, it's not even like a sneeze. It's not like a little cough. It's not even a puff of air. Back in the Hale-Bopp days, we were having two or three X-class flares every day because of discharging the solar capacitor. Right now we're in a solar minimum. There's really no solar activity. So a B-class flare is like nothing. But I want to read what they're saying about this. Let me go up to the top, and then I'll read my comment. The title of this article is Solar Storm Could Strike Earth on Thursday. And so this is, I'm sure he's actually talking, but there's another article that puts it out on the 20th. And I'm just going to read this. It says, space weather experts, oh boy, that must really, that some of us get your attention right there. Space weather experts at NASA and NOAA, see, I told you, NASA and NOAA are combining. That's, I said before, my prediction is absolutely 100% right on. It says, space weather experts at NASA and NOAA are warning that a solar storm could strike Earth on Thursday or Friday. In addition to triggering aurora far from the poles, a strong solar storm could also disrupt electrical generation systems, the electric grid, satellite communications, and radio signals. And then they talk about this physicist, Dr. Tamitha Skov, said the aurora, you know, and they go on talking about this. And then they talk about, listen to this, while typically known for their weather forecasts, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and its National Weather Service is also responsible for space weather. Well, okay, so now they're doing the combination of NASA and NOAA. Well, there are private companies and other agencies that monitor and forecast space weather. The official source, this is I'm reading, the official source for our alerts and warnings of the space environment is the Space Weather Prediction Center, is in Boulder, Colorado, and is a service of the National Weather Service, which is part of NOAA. So they're outlining all of this. And so what I said, and then they go on to say, a coronal mass ejection, this is, I'm reading again, a coronal mass ejection, or CME for short, that occurred yesterday is responsible for this potential solar storm. Okay, so anyway, then it goes on, based on their latest analysis, the current forecast calls for active levels, etc. They go on. And so anyway, here's my response. I actually put this in the blog notes, and I don't know if it's going to stay there, but here's my comment. Just a second here. Just a second. Okay, I'm just getting this up here. Okay, it's a comment from my name, James M. McCanny. Here's my comment, and it's the top comment, and it stayed the top comment. It says, I say, for months I have been predicting that NASA and NOAA would collaborate on a false flag solar flare event along with all the dire predictions listed here coming to you this fall. The current story is just priming the pump, seeding the public perception for a big false flag this October where their BS will initiate power outages, manipulated weather, and other calamities designed to disrupt the November election process. This story is, as I said, priming the news pump. This has been subtly going on for months. Listen to my radio shows for a more complete record of this. Now, this monster flare is a B1, the lowest category possible, nothing to write home about. The thing they do not mention is that August is aurora month, and it is more than common to see exactly what they're talking about, auroras far south. Maybe they will have some fun and pull some electric grids offline to further prime the pump. And if they do, watch as that hits the mainstream media with all the talking heads repeating their lines. So that's my response. And it's still, as far as I can tell, is still standing there. Okay. Oh, now once again, doggone, I hate it when I'm right again. But you could see in that article, now if you want to go there, read the whole article, you can see they're priming the pump. They're laying it all out. Here's a flare that has no possibility of causing anything at all. And they're blowing it into, it's going to be the grid out, and it's going to be electricity affected, and auroras, and satellites could go out. Look at what they're priming the pump here, boys and girls. I said it. It's true. It's coming. And imagine if all of those things happen, all of a sudden, and sure, there's always going to be some kind of little flare activity on the sun. And they're going to blow it up into the biggest thing since King Kong. And this is coming this fall. And if they can take down power grids in key areas, take down satellite communication, which is key to getting votes in and having communications, could be disrupted, intercepted, changed. Imagine the votes that are being sent from some city off to the National Counting Center, and it's disrupted and changed. All of this is coming. They are going to steal this election big time, because the people in power, and I'm not just talking Democrats, I'm talking a lot of Republicans here too, who are still deep swampers in the intelligence communities, the NSA, the CIA, the FBI, are still highly politicized. And they are, remember, they control most of the political offices. And you don't find, if you look at analysis in Congress, etc., you don't find hard-hitting people who are really out there for the American public. It's all a big show. They're still talking about the Russian collusion and stuff like that. Even the Republicans who are supposed to be going after this, they're not doing it in a hard-hitting manner. This Durham guy that's supposed to be coming out with a big report, hey, it's going to be more gas blowing in the wind, because it's not going to do anything. It's not going to change anything. The time it takes them to do this stuff is years. It just drags on. People put this false hope in that the government is some going to cure these problems of corruption in the government. No, they're just waiting for this fall election so they can win it from mayoral up to presidential levels at all levels. And then life will get back to normal in their world. Here's a quick note on Bill and Melinda Gates this week. The vaccine stock that they have invested in went up 40% in one day. So make no mistake about it. They are heavily invested in the coronavirus, in vaccines, in 2020 ID chips, in the vaccines. They are heavily invested in their personal wealth. On one of their streams of income, which is this vaccine company, went up 40% in one day. What do you think is going on here? Insider trading, getting their vaccine in. There are countries which are having mandatory national vaccination. In other words, everybody roll up your sleeve. You got to get a shot. This is the world. And, you know, the number of people who are going to resist and live through this because they're prepared to take care of themselves. This is, I hate to say it, I mean, this is biblical proportion. And it was predicted, and it's coming down to this, that only the people who can take care of themselves and resist the onslaught and literally take care of themselves and the small group of people around them, look at people like the Amish, who don't have vaccinations. They have wonderfully healthy kids and, you know, general good health. They educate their kids. I was in a Amish it was like a farm. I was driving down the road. This is back in the summertime, a number of years ago. I was driving through Iowa. So I come across this, these two Amish girls are out there selling strawberries. So I stopped and bought some strawberries and asked them if I could go visit the farm. And so anyway, they took me over to the farm and I visited it and they showed me around and some of their old, I was interested in their tools, their hand tools that they use, etc. And then I said, by the way, I write books and you know, I will send them to you for free. And I also have DVDs and things like that. They said, we will not take the DVDs or CDs. We don't have any media that will play. Only thing they would take were the books, the print books, not the e-books. They would not take my e-books in e-book format, which I have, some of my books still are in print form. So I sent them my books to this farm where the Amish live. But they are very strict. While I was there, this is a summer day, the kids were in school. I could look in the window there and I could see the teacher and I could see the little kids there. These are the people that have followed the rules, the Christian rules, to the T. They're going to be able to take care of themselves. They grow all their own food. They have an abundance of food that they sell. And with the profit that they make from selling what they their extra food, they have purchased land because they don't have stockpiles of money. So they have purchased land, and now they've become a dominant force in the political region in that area. Because and they've done this over a long period of time. Those people are going to do well. Those people are going to do well during the coronavirus and avoid the vaccinations and the forced vaccinations, etc. But the rest of the people have lived. You know, they. It's just too easy to live this lifestyle. And when it all comes crashing down, you got no place to go. The government's going to be the only place that you're going to be able to turn to solve your problems. But there you go. I saw an interview with Bill Gates, and he goes, "Oh, we invest." His way of putting it is, "Oh, we donate to all of these charitable causes." So his vaccine company, in his eyes, is a charitable donation. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So they're donating the money into these vaccine companies, but believe me, they are part of it. Tony Fauci, his right-hand man in Washington, D.C., these people are all in cahoots. And yeah, his stock, one company that he has invested in, 40% increase in one day. So make no mistake about it, these guys are there for the money and control. It's money and control. Interesting, this past week, cyber attack on the Canadian government accounts. So people who had accounts with the Canadian government had it hacked. And I don't know all of the fallout from this. But once again, people are still using RSA encryption codes, something I happen to be an expert in. Spent much of my life dealing with encryption codes and actually broke the most famous encryption code, the public key encryption codes known as the RSA codes, broke those in the year 2007 and published my book, Calculate Primes. Later publishing a book, these are available on my webpage, Breaking RSA Codes for Fun and Profit. And showing how to break the RSA codes, and people are still using these, like the Canadian government. So it's child play to break into these. On the voter front, it turns out that Alabama has required voter IDs. And I saw a picture of a billboard with a black woman. She's holding her voter ID, and it says, "You have to have this to vote." So imagine that in Alabama, you need a license to go fishing. You just can't go out and throw a line in the water and take all the fish you want. There are limits. And the reason for that is because if you look, for example, when I lived in Mexico when I was young, when I was basically a kid, I grew up in Minnesota, but then after I got out of college, I went to Mexico to follow my nose and adventure. And Mexico, probably 100 years earlier or 200 years earlier, had jungles, it had jaguars, it had, you know, it was a country with lush vegetation. And as the population grew, they cut everything down. They killed all the little animals and birds and the birds of paradise. The quetzal bird, I saw personally a quetzal bird, one of the last few remaining ones in the wild. I think I've told this story on the air before about how I was roaming through the jungles of Quintana Roo, which is the eastern, it's actually, I think it's a state now. At the time, it was a territory. That's where Tulum is and Cancun, etc. But I was at Tulum, and I walked through the jungle to meet this the Lacandon Indians. And I went there, and this woman had kind of like, it was like almost like a little store. And the only thing from the modern world she had was that sweetened condensed milk. So I bought that, and I drank it. I mean, that was the only thing I had to eat other than coconuts and conch from the ocean. That's what I was living on there, basically. Very good condition, by the way. That's a very good diet, actually. And I looked up, and above her head was a quetzal bird. And it was around evening time, and the quetzal birds roost in the daytime and fly at night. And when this bird flew over my head with big, long tail, and I looked up, it was like 2 feet above my head. And underneath was the form of a comet. Anyway, the Quetzalcoatl is the plumed serpent god of the night sky in the Popol Vuh, in the Mayan, basically, religion, mythology. And Quetzalcoatl was the comet Venus that came by and ravaged Earth on two different occasions and caused one of them a major pole shift. But anyway, I talk about that a lot about that in my work. It looks like I've got a couple minutes left here of this show. I want to remind you that my webpage, the water filters, are there. I have posted, none of the water filter vendors have the stainless steel containers. Everybody's out because they all come from the same source. So I've posted how to go out and buy food-grade plastic containers and convert them, and then buy my water filter elements and put them in. It's a simple way to make a water filter because we simply don't have the containers. We have the containers for the whole house water filters. We have the MR5s in stock. So go take a look at those, and that's for the whole house. I highly recommend those. It's on my webpage, jmccsci.com. But go to my webpage, and you will find a PDF. You can download it, and it tells you how to make, go out and buy food-grade plastic containers and make your own water filter containers, and then you buy the filters elements from me and make your own water filter. Okay, so that's there. The wing generator, have your own electricity. Just the questionnaire is online, one of the sub pages. Just click on it. Also, the shipping container and shipping container buildings, all of that information there. My Patreon channel and the paid cast is there. All of these things I'm working on. I have a lot of irons in the fire. But the paid cast is the educational program for K-12, very important supplemental program for education that gives kids some direction, some scientific basic principles, etc., and understanding how to weave through this chaos that is being presented to young people today. And I'm out of time. We'll talk to you next week. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.